the Jack this Friday, October 5th at 8 for Swingin' in the Rain.
Welcome to a Juno Afternoon. I'm Andy Klein, your host for today, this Wednesday, October 3rd, and with me in the studio today, Michael Howard is here from Anchorage, a guitarist and a musician from Anchorage, who's going to be playing at the Rookery on Friday. We'll be talking to him in just a moment. Kimberly Naylor is going to be here talking about what's happening at the City Museum and the centennial celebration of the Alaska Native Brotherhood. Joanne George also has a show on First Friday. We'll be here talking about her artwork, and so will photographer Joel Monday, who's going to be at the UAS bookstore for the First Friday. And then the Philippines and Alaska, an exhibit happening at the Alaska State Museum. We'll be talking to Jenny Del Rosario and Jackie Manning about that, which is going to be really interesting and exciting. I'm happy to have all those artists in the studio with me today. A very artistic Juno afternoon today, and we're going to be going to National Native News first. We'll be talking to Michael Howard right after that.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. A former Pueblo leader is arrested and charged in an embezzlement scheme. According to the U.S. Attorney's Office for New Mexico, Bruce Sanchez was arrested and charged with conspiracy and embezzlement offenses. Sanchez is a former governor of Santa Ana Pueblo. Between 2003 and 2009, he's accused of conspiring with Thomas Kiesing to embezzle more than $3 million from the Indian Pueblo Federal Development Corporation, which Sanchez was president and CEO of at the time. The two allegedly engaged in a scheme to unlawfully profit from the development of the Albuquerque Indian School property. Sanchez is also charged with tax evasion counts. Both men were arrested Tuesday and, if convicted, face fines and prison time. An Oklahoma tribe is being recognized for its cultural, historical, natural, and recreational resources. As Kurt Gortney with KGOU reports, the Cherokee Nation is the newest tribal destination of the year.
The Eastern Oklahoma Tribe was awarded the honor by the American Indian and Alaska Native Tourism Association during its recent meeting in Montana. The Cherokee Nation Tourism Program began in 2007 to help promote the tribe's history and culture. The tribe has long offered interpretive and historical events, but has recently increased its efforts to provide a variety of cultural tours and activities, including the opening of three museums in historically renovated Cherokee buildings. Principal Chief Bill John Baker said the tribe's success further strengthens Oklahoma as a top tourist destination in the nation and provides a much-needed economic benefit to communities throughout the state. The tribe is also reaching out online by teaching Cherokee history and language on its Facebook page. For National Native News, I'm Kurt Gwartney in Oklahoma City.
An Alaska tribe and the U.S. military amend relationships. The Sunak tribe has been working with the U.S. Coast Guard over the years to rectify a decades-old incident by the military. The tribe, located in Kodiak, saw the area grow during World War II. Hundreds of people were said to be living there when the military was sent in with thousands of military members and civilians to build a base. Ivor Malutin, chair of the Sunak Tribal Council, says a 1942 accident by the Navy impacted the tribe.
A mail boat was hauling freight and passengers around Kodiak Island. Kodiak has about seven, eight different villages, and in the process, they were coming across the bay, and a Navy destroyer cut the mail boat right in two. And they were just lucky because there were 15 people on board, and two people died. And the Navy totally disregarded everything, and it was taken to court, and it's all a public record that the Navy had lost the case, and they did absolutely nothing to really take care of the people other than to put them in a little cannery.
Malutin says even though the Navy's gone, in recent years, the tribe and the Coast Guard wanted to heal from the event. They held a memorial service using the Coast Guard Cutter Spar. Then the tribe honored the Coast Guard last year. The unit and ship were made honorary tribal members. And this summer, they held an event. Michelle Shallop with the Coast Guard talked about the relationship in an interview from the ship in June.
There's a lot in common between the Sunak Tribe of Kodiak and the Coast Guard in that we have both a recognition of the importance of remembering our heritage and adapting our cultures to what is current needs of members today, but to ensure that future generations do learn our traditions and of historical events like the Sunak adopting us as a member of their tribe, to make sure that our future generations are aware of the significance of those types of events and in who we become.
The event included Aleutic dancers and the presentation of plaques to commemorate the Spar's addition to the tribe as an honorary ship of the Sunak. During this week in 1962, the Institute of American Indian Arts opened in Santa Fe, New Mexico. The tribal college offers four-year fine arts degrees. The institute is celebrating 50 years next week with an open house which includes panel sessions, campus tours, and storytelling. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kowanic Broadcast Corporation. Funding comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, the McCune Charitable Foundation, the Ford Foundation, and the Nathan Cummings Foundation. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
When we grow up, do we have to act big? How should we behave as our faces age? 'Cause there's a life ahead that's left to live. For now I am yours, you know I got a lot to give. It is what it is. I am, I am.
Just a sample there of I Am from Michael Howard off of The Caribou and the Wolf, his latest CD. Michael Howard's with us in the studio right now. How you doing, man?
Hi, Andy. Doing great.
Thanks so much for coming in. Appreciate it. Also here with Libby Sterling.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm great.
And thanks. You guys are kind of like not exactly young childhood, but childhood friends. You knew each other in high school and stuff, right?
Yeah, we started playing music kind of right after high school and played for a little while and certain configurations of various other folks in Anchorage, and we've grown up a lot since then. But
those of us here in Juneau know Libby is a great fiddle player and see you in lots of different bands and iterations of stuff, and of course around folk festival and that stuff as well. Are you guys going to get to play together when you're here, Michael? Is that kind of the idea?
That's the plan. We're going to spend the next couple of days on the boat running over some stuff, and then we'll be at the Rookery on Friday at 6 o'clock.
Very good.
Yeah.
And are you gonna do? Is it? Are you gonna do some stuff solo, and then you'll join on a few
I'll
things.
Yeah, I'll sit in on a few things.
Nice.
He's the boss. I don't want to.
Yeah, absolutely.
Get
I understand.
In the way.
I understand.
We're gonna go with the flow.
Yeah, very good. Tell me a little bit about your background. You live up in Anchorage still, but you've kind of been back and forth to Portland a little bit too.
Yeah, that's right. I grew up in Anchorage, born and reared, and then I lived in Portland for about 5 years or so, and was doing the music thing kind of in some rock bands down there, and ended up going to school, and life sort of brought me back to Anchorage for the last few years, and sort of been dabbling in and out of the music, and then just kind of, you know, it's always been a part of my life, and just about over the last year or so, just started to power ahead real seriously with the singer-songwriter stuff. So that's where we're at now.
Give me an idea. What's the music scene in Portland like compared to the music scene in Anchorage? I'm guessing they're quite different, but I don't know.
It's really fascinating right now, particularly of note. You know, you've had a lot of Alaskans moving down to Portland or Seattle just to, you know, get their feet on the ground down there, and many of them now have, you know, made a name for themselves. Plenty of bands, plenty of great Alaskan bands, and interestingly, Anchorage is just blowing up right now. There's, you know, things come in waves, and just the last couple years or so, there's so many new bands and songwriters, and this feeds into like artists and promoters and galleries and venues, and we're definitely on a new wave right now, and I think there's a lot of sort of advantages to being in Alaska right now.
Is it the influence of particular, I mean, is Portugal the man or something like that? Is that this thing that broke it, or is there some sort of influence of one particular band or group of people, or is it just kind of feels like a groundswell?
I have a theory that I haven't heard many people talk about, but I honestly think that it's I think it's the age of a certain generation of Alaskans, and I think that this is my theory, that the recession brought back and kept back a lot of young people who grew up in Alaska or lived in Seattle and Portland, and we were sort of, we all found ourselves back home at this time, and I think a few people sort of started coming out of the woodwork, and I think everyone else kind of saw it happening, and, you know, it builds on, you know, generations of bands that have been going down there and making it, and now we all find ourselves in Anchorage, I think.
Yeah.
So that's, yeah.
And contrast that with Portland a little bit for me. I mean, everyone hears about this Portland music scene and all these famous bands have come out of Portland and stuff, but is it like Valhalla or is it like...
it's still awesome, and it's hard to speak to because I think it depends on, you know, who you are personally and sort of what you're playing and what sort of music scene you're in. I think it's the kind of place that any big city you could get lost and just sort of lose it and go nuts real quick. But if you've got, you know, a good support network and whatnot, you know, there's plenty of Alaskans down there that'll let you stay on their couch and try to make it.
Yeah. I mean, I guess people have the feeling you go down there and you can't help but all of a sudden you're in bands and getting played and, you know, all that. And it's probably not quite that easy, right?
It's tricky. There's a lot more of it going on. So there's more opportunity at the same time as it, you know, it can
more competition for the gigs and stuff, though, as well. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, really interesting to kind of have a little bit of a taste of both things. Do you feel more at home in Anchorage? I mean, is that your home, sort of? Or do you feel more like you want to be part of this kind of thriving scene that's happening in Portland?
That's a good question. It's both. They're like, Alaska is definitely my home, and I've always benefited by going down there, you know, in around the Northwest and seeing what's going on. I've always learned and grown and developed a lot. But this is home, and it's the back and forth that's been good for me. You know, being in one place too long can
maybe that
drive you nuts.
Promotes growth and promotes you know, experience and that kind of thing. Do you have any particular big influences that you think are some of the biggest things that, you know, you either admire or you feel like really impacts your music?
Man, this question keeps coming up, and I just still have not gotten my radio answer down. It's
I don't want your radio answer, man.
You know,
are we on radio?
Are we on air?
Wait, is this thing on?
I think it comes from, you know, my personal story is kind of this background of playing in, you know, sort of indie rock bands and sort of the way I approach music comes from that sort of rock and roll songwriting. And then over time, you know, my taste has developed, and I sort of have gone into this more folk.
It's interesting because as your taste has developed, it seems like it has stripped away your music.
It's,
like, the way your taste has developed, it hasn't made your music more complicated. It's made it kind of, it's bared it down a little bit.
Yeah, and to speak of that, there's definitely spots on, you'll hear it in the album. I experimented a lot. This is definitely a big personal development through recording these songs, and some are so simple. You'll hear some folk, some bluegrass, some more like indie rock dance jams, like the Vancouver song. So it was very much me touching on everything that I can do, and out of this process, what I'm hoping is that I've come up with something neat.
Well, speaking of coming up with something, you've got your guitar sitting there in your lap right now and a harmonica strapped to your neck. We'd love to hear a little bit of something. What are you going to play?
Sure, let's do it. What I'd love to do is play a newer song that I wrote over this summer, if that's all right.
Yeah, that's all right with me. Here's Michael Howard right now.
Thanks, Andy. This one's called Brutal Heart. Well, that night the sky was hanging upside down when she headed south to a different town. Far away from me and far away from every little thing that held her down. Now all my flowers have turned to seed, my pieces lifted by the breeze. I'm not rooted down in the rocky ground that used to nurture me. Washington's the widest drive, from top to bottom, from every side. We're back on our own, and I'm going down to the riverside, where there's a lover waiting there for me. This heart is restless like the sea. Her eyes are dark like the Portland sky, and wet like the rain. no bad love, but it's feeling right. So I'll suit your purpose for tonight. Kick off your shoes and I'll hang my hat until the morning light. If I don't make it far, at least I got there gracefully. If you're all that I need, I wish I knew what was good for me. 'Cause it was written from the start, a brutal heart needs space to roam. And if we're all made of stars and our bodies are the dust, let those northern winds carry me back home. Agree to wear a sweaty brow, my left arm an axe and my right a plow. So I sat with fate and we waged our bets by the whiskey well. To the one who's dealt the losing hand, we live the life of a working man. And when the cards laid down, fate made a frown and he slipped away. This life we've chosen is day by day. What's right or wrong, well, who's to say? But your spirit's strong and we get along. Now let's keep it that way. If I don't make it far, at least I got there gracefully. You're all that I need, I wish I knew what was good for me. 'Cause it was written from the start, a brutal heart needs space to roam. And if we're all made of stars and our bodies are the dust, let those northern winds carry me back home. Well, that night the sky was hanging upside down when she headed south to a different town. Far away from me and far away from every little thing that held her down.
All right. Michael Howard, that was so nice.
Thank you
so much. It's always so wonderful to sit here and just watch someone create something and do something live. It's just great. So thank you so much. It's much appreciated. That's Michael Howard. He's going to be playing a concert at the Rookery on Friday for First Friday, starting at 6 o'clock. Libby Sterling, his friend from high school up in Anchorage, is going to be joining him as well on a few songs. Thanks to both of you for coming in. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks. Can I mention one more?
Sure,
there's also the first episode, I guess you could say, of Gold Street Music is this Saturday at Resurrection Lutheran Church, and Michael will be playing there as well as Mike Truax, Irene Muller, Tracy Spring's going to be there. I think Pat Henry, maybe The Stays, and Betsy Sims, I think, are on the list as well. So that's 7:30, $5 at the door. Wanted to put it in
awesome.
A plug for
yeah.
that, too. That'll be
more,
fun.
More music here in Juneau. Fantastic. Michael Howard, Caribou and the Wolf is the name of his CD. You can go to thecaribouandthewolf.com.
Exactly.
Is that right? And you can pick up copies of that. What was that last song that was just that you played?
That one's called Brutal Heart.
And a brand new one.
Yeah, and there's some links. If you pull me up on Facebook, there's some
cool
couple links to new things.
All right. Michael Howard, one more track here off of Caribou and the Wolf as we bring in our next guest. This one is called Vancouver, B.C. Thank you.
mountains along the Cascades. My eyes followed each and every snowy top. The faces pass so far below the airplane above. This haze I'll stay. Over the weekend you and I took a long ride. The train comes later, so I think I'll stay lady. Oh, can I stay lady? Please let me stay lady.
Great stuff there from Michael Howard. Want to thank him one more time for not only coming in, but performing live. That's him packing up his guitar right there. Awesome stuff. Kimberly Naylor is with me next. Kimberly, thanks so much for coming in.
Hi, thank you.
There's a really cool thing happening at the City Museum for First Friday, starting First Friday, and it's the start of the centennial celebration for the Alaska Native Brotherhood, right?
That's right, yeah.
So tell me just a little bit about what's going to be shown at the museum. It sounds really exciting. It's such an amazing institution here in Juneau.
Yeah, we're on First Friday, October 5th, from 4:30 to 7:30. We have Kim Metcalf's. She worked on an exhibit for us. And
she also is the author of The Sisterhood, the history of Camp 2 of the Alaska Native Sisterhood. So she's so well steeped in the history and the people of the Alaska Native Sisterhood and Alaska Native Brotherhood.
She is, yeah. She's the expert. So
yes.
We're really excited to have her be joining us. So
yeah, very cool. So tell me about what... When you walk in, what's it going to look like? What are people going to be able to see?
Well, the exhibit is in the video room, and we have panels just talking about Kim's experience with the Alaska Native Brotherhood and the Alaska Native Sisterhood. And we'll have a reception. We'll have treats for everyone to enjoy, and you'll get to learn about, the Alaska Native Brotherhood and the centennial celebration. 100 years.
It's amazing. 100 years now. The little bit I've read about it is that while the Alaska Native Brotherhood is kind of roots itself as being founded in Sitka, there's actually some history that's been done that shows that the first meeting ever might have been November 5th of 1912, which is exactly 100 years ago, and here in Juneau.
That's right. Yeah. There, it's actually has quite a bit of history in Juneau. And, Kim will be able to speak more about that during the First Friday reception.
And is there a lot of artwork and that kind of stuff that's, that's sort of available to look at?
Well, there's mainly what we have in this exhibit is information, is panels and information. There is on display, there's a man and a woman, and they have traditional, regalia.
Oh, okay.
And so that's available in the exhibit as well.
Right, very cool.
So, yeah.
All right, so all starting First Friday. It's going to be at the City Museum. Once again, it's the centennial celebration of the Alaska Native Brotherhood. Of course, an incredibly important organization here in Juneau and throughout Southeast Alaska and throughout Alaska. And Kimberly Naylor, thanks so much for coming in and letting us know about it.
Thank you so much.
All right. I appreciate it. Terrific.
The road is long, with a many a winding tongue that leads us to who knows where.
Well, the rest of today is calling for periods of light rain diminishing and highs around 46 degrees. Cloudy skies for tonight and rain likely tomorrow, rain likely Thursday night as well. Mostly cloudy, chance of rain for Friday and Friday night through Sunday night, mostly cloudy and lows around 46. So maybe not too much rain through this weekend. That sounds like a good forecast. Partly cloudy skies predicted for Columbus Day. That's an exciting forecast. Always love to hear just partly cloudy skies. Joanne George is with me now. Joanne is a wonderful artist whose work is going to be displayed at Heritage Coffee starting first Friday. And Joanne, thanks so much for joining me.
Well, thank you for having me.
Tell me a little bit about the works that you've got hanging in Heritage. Is it got a specific theme, or is it from all kinds of different periods of your work?
Yeah, it kind of goes back quite a ways. I first was published by Riemann Jost back in 1982. And so some of those prints go back to that era.
Wow, okay.
Up to a few more new things. And it's some of them are sold out prints and a few originals.
Do you have like a, stylistically, do you feel like there's, you know, when you look back at old prints, you think, oh man, I didn't know what I was doing? Or do you think like, wow, that was a really interesting thing I was working on then? I mean, how do you, what sort of emotions do you have when you look at your own work from that's so old?
When I look back at some of the early things I did, I think, oh my God, did I do that? And I'm sure if I keep living another 20 years, I'll look back at what I'm doing now and say, oh my God, I can't believe I did that. So, but yeah, my style has changed. I first started out doing pen and ink totem poles for the Park Service in Sitka. And from there, I started doing pen and ink drawings and then started selling some. And then I met up with Riemann Jost, and then I just kept on going on my own and involved in watercolor and some collage and now doing more oils, which I love to do.
When you do pen and ink, is that strictly a kind of a black and white work, or do you add watercolors as well to that, or how does that work?
At first it was just pen and ink,
mm-hmm.
and then I gradually added watercolor. Well, first I added colored inks to the black ink, and then I went into adding watercolor and then putting color pencil underneath as a base color and then doing pen and ink over that. So it's just gradually evolved step by step.
And your work, I would describe it as kind of it's a realistic portrayal of the natural surroundings. So you concentrate a lot on animals and birds, totems.
Animals and birds and the native culture. I was married to a Tlingit from Angoon, or am married to a Tlingit from Angoon, and his parents were a very great influence on me, Jimmy
okay.
George and Lydia George. And they told a lot of stories, and it just seemed natural to want to illustrate those stories. So it kind of grew from there.
Yeah, interesting. And but you've always had that interest in the natural
right.
art, right?
Yeah, like, I've always been, yeah. In college, I majored in geology and geography. It's just very interested in the natural world, yeah.
Did you work in that area as well? Or
actually, I didn't. When I came to Alaska in 1967, I came as a teacher, but I didn't have a teaching certificate. I went right to Angoon, and they accepted anyone who had a bachelor's degree, which I had a bachelor's degree. So they plugged me into the school system, and those first students that I taught, I was sorry that they probably didn't learn anything.
They've probably recovered by now.
Yeah. Some of them still, I still see some, and they'll call me teacher.
And where did you move up from?
New Hampshire.
New Hampshire is a wild and mountainous and beautiful place as well. So did you find certain inspiration in Alaska specifically?
Yeah, when the recruiter came to New Hampshire, and I'd grown up skiing, hiking, camping, and a recruiter came from Alaska in 1967 to the university where I was and recruited teachers because they really needed them in the rural schools. And when they sent Alaska, I said, yes. And it's just beautiful here. It's beautiful in New England, and I love it here.
What is it that when you are thinking about composing a painting, what is it that you sort of look for? What is it that catches the element you're looking for?
Good question. I really don't have an answer for that. Sometimes things just pop into my mind, or I'll see a lot of people keep sketchbooks and stuff, which I don't do. I don't have many sketchbooks, but I get my ideas when I'm walking or hiking, and I can picture it in my head.
So you paint just purely from memory, or
no.
Do you take photos? Or?
Well, in my head, I have a picture of what I want to do.
I see.
And I do have tons and tons of photos.
I see.
So I might find rocks from one photo and trees from another, or I have tons of raven pictures, photos.
Uh-huh. Right, sure.
Things like that. And just look through things and add them into the picture however I envision it to be.
Is there an animal you like most that catches your imagination most, more than any other animal in Alaska?
Yeah, I love bears, but who doesn't?
Well, yeah. They're hard not to love.
And killer whales.
Killer whales.
My father-in-law was the head of the killer whale clan in Angoon. And so it's been part of my life for the years. I've been married for 43 years, and it's just been part of our clan that I'm adopted into.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Now, bears, I can see from an artist's perspective, because bears are just infused with personality.
Oh, yeah.
But how do you do that with a killer whale, or do you?
You don't, but it's just something I really love.
Okay,
you know,
I see.
You asked me about what animals did I like, and...
But you don't paint killer whales as much, or do you?
No.
Right. But how about that sort of idea of infusing personality into the animals that you're painting? Is that something you...
Yeah, you like to have them strike a pose, so to speak. I mean, ravens have so much character, and bears, too, you know. And I always think about what I want the raven or the bear to be doing, you know, whether they... peaceful or aggressive or, you know, relaxing or whatever.
Right,
you know.
Just hanging out.
Hanging out, yeah.
Bears do a lot of that.
Right, they do.
Well, Joanne George, thanks so much for coming in. I'm a really big fan of your work,
so
I'm really happy to know that your work's going to be showing at Heritage Coffee, the downtown Heritage Coffee, the big Heritage Coffee downtown on Franklin Street
and
there.
And they're having free gelato. For anybody that
comes
tonight.
All right. So for First Friday, free gelato at Heritage Coffee. And you can see the beautiful work of Joanne George hanging on the wall. Joanne, thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you much.
Appreciate it so much. This is coming up next. We've got Writer's Almanac with Garrison Keillor.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Wednesday. It's the 3rd of October, 2012. It's the birthday of the chick lit novelist Lindsay Kelk, born in Doncaster, South Yorkshire, 1980. She was living in London, had just gotten back from a trip to New York, got the idea to write a novel, and it came out entitled I Heart New York. Started a whole series of I Heart novels, I Heart Hollywood, I Heart Paris, Las Vegas, London. Lindsay Kelk, whose next novel, About a Girl, is due out next year. It's the birthday of Emily Post, born Baltimore, 1873, wrote about etiquette. Emily Post, who said, "Manners are a sensitive awareness of the feelings of others. If you have that awareness, you have good manners, no matter what fork you use." It's the birthday of Harvey Kurtzman, the cartoonist, born in Brooklyn, 1924. He was one of the founders of Mad Magazine in 1952. It's the birthday of the man who said 50% of people won't vote and 50% don't read newspapers. I hope it's the same 50%. Gore Vidal, born at West Point, New York in 1925. Best known for his works of historical fiction, Julian, Burr, and Lincoln, and his 1968 novel, Myra Breckinridge, a satire about a transsexual, was an international bestseller. He died of pneumonia 2 months ago at the age of 86. Gore Vidal, who had many harsh things to say about the New York Times because they'd given him a bad review at one time. They published a long obituary in his honor, but it contained 3 errors that required correction. And it's the birthday of the novelist Thomas Wolfe, Asheville, North Carolina, 1900. Wanted to be a playwright at first. He wrote, acted in several plays at the University of North Carolina, later at Harvard, moved to New York, taught playwriting at NYU, turned to fiction when he was 26 and wrote what would become his most famous novel, Look Homeward, Angel. Thomas Wolfe, who said, "All things on earth point home in old October, sailors to sea, travelers to walls and fences, hunters to field and hollow, and the long voice of the hounds, the lover to the love he has forsaken." Here's a poem by Ursula K. Le Guin, Song for a Daughter. Mother of my granddaughter, listen to my song. A mother can't do right, a daughter can't be wrong. I have no claim whatever on amnesty from you, nor will she forgive you for anything you do. So are we knit together by force of opposites, the daughter that unravels the skein the mother knits. One must be divided so that one be whole, and this is the duplicity alleged of woman's soul. To be that heavy mother who weighs in everything is to be the daughter whose footstep is the spring. Granddaughter of my mother, listen to my song. Nothing you do will ever be right. Nothing you do is wrong. A poem by Ursula K. Le Guin, Song for a Daughter, from Finding My Elegy, New and Selected Poems, 1960 to 2010, published by Houghton Mifflin Harcourt, and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation, publisher of Poetry Magazine, celebrating 100 years of discovering great poets and printing their verse. Back issues and subscriptions available at poetryfoundation.org. And by Goddard College, offering low-residency bachelor's and master's of fine arts degrees in creative writing. More at goddard.edu. Engineered by Noah Smith, be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Songs about photographs. It was either that, Kodachrome, or Def Leppard. I decided to go with Ringo Starr. Joel Mundy, photographer here, is with me right now. And Joel, you've got a First Friday exhibit coming up at the UAS bookstore.
I do. It's called Color Photography.
And tell me about that. That's a significant title for a lot of people think, that's kind of a throwaway title. That's a significant title for you because you've worked so long in black and white.
It is. And I think I was, coming off of the last show was so black and white, I think I was definitely ready to work with some color. But it's also sort of a intentionally fundamental title because I think the show, part of it is challenging people's preconceptions about photography. So I wanted to call it color photography to sort of, conjure up whatever people, whatever that means to them, and then kind of have them walk into the show and see what it is to me.
So. Yeah, and so tell me about that difference between working in black and white and color. What is the... I would think you're not specifically looking for like colorful things necessarily. You're just trying to reflect a different part of what that scene is.
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, it's usually the black and white decision. They're all captured as color, and so to go black and white, it's always a decision that happens afterwards. But
that's an interesting thing, and I hadn't really thought about that because, of course, in the past you'd either be using black and white or color film.
Sure.
And now it's all a post-production thing of now I can either desaturate this right and take all the color out, or I can right. So that's
absolutely
interesting.
Yeah. And so always capturing in color gives you that. It gives you options for one, but then it also allows you to get a greater range when you're if you do decide to do the black and white conversions.
Yeah. So you're, I'm on a gallery right now that shows your stuff, and give people the web address for that.
And that's harbors2012.com.
So if you go to harbors2012.com, you'll see a couple of different titles, and one of them says color photography, and you click on that and you see Joel's work, some of which is going to be reflected in this gallery showing starting on Friday at the UIS bookstore. It's beautiful stuff, and outdoor scenes, and most of them kind of scenic actual landscapes.
I would say, yeah, I mean, I think it's not intentionally so, but that's certainly what I shoot a lot, kind of just as I'm out walking around. But basically, it's, there's general subjects, the glacier, Spalding Beach, we were talking about a little before. And
View of the harbor, Auk Harbor there, but from an unusual standpoint, so that you were saying a lot of people ask you the same thing I did, which was, where is this? What harbor is this? It's like, well, it's Auk Harbor. It's not too...
But it's so it's these repeating subjects, and the goal was to sort of showcase a variety of styles. So, I mean, some of them I think people will recognize as what they would consider a very traditional photograph. And then some have been changed, so that they're so abstract, they're just mostly shape and color. And so the, I wanted to put those side by side and have people compare them and
right.
see, sort of inspire that conversation about, is it still a photograph? I mean, is there a point where it stops, being a photograph?
And
for me, it doesn't, but, I'm interested to hear what other people might have to say about that.
So one of the ones I'm looking at that seems more abstract, I think it looks to me like leaves. Is that what that is?
And it is leaves.
Okay.
So that's interesting. Yeah. And I think some people...
But it's very abstract. You would. Yeah. You could have easily told me, no, that's a campfire
sure.
or something,
Sure. And it looks kind of like fire as
right.
well. Some people guess that. So
right.
yeah, that's interesting. That's what I love, is to see that, that reaction and see what, if people get the leaves right away or not. But, and especially having it, next to a more traditional, what I would call a more traditional capture photograph.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's going to be fun too, just to have them side by side, and people can see the comparison right there. And so that's what the goal was, to make this concise group of kind of fun comparisons.
Right, right. Well, you come from an interesting kind of background in which I think, I'm just kind of guessing this, but where art and photography have probably played a large role in you kind of coming to a new life in a way. Is that fair to say? You've had kind of some low points.
I think that's totally fair to say. I mean, it's been another reason I'm excited about this show is it is at the UAS bookstore, and both photography and learning photography at UAS and just the school in general has been a huge part of a healing process for me over the past few years. So it's exciting to have this show and to be able to do it here.
You've gone from a situation where you're actually homeless for a while, had some crime.
It's true.
Stuff like that going
it's
on.
True.
And now
yeah.
you're at this point where, you're making vibrant, beautiful, amazing, cool art that is kind of contributing to the community in a way. I think that's a really interesting story.
Yeah, it feels pretty good to be able to say that, I think.
Yeah. Yeah.
I hope it is. I mean, I hope people enjoy it. And yeah, it's...
Well, you're creating something that wasn't ever there before. That's a positive.
Yeah.
I mean, however people react to it, I mean, I think that's a great...
I like that.
Positive.
Yeah, I never thought of it like that, but...
Yeah, yeah. yeah. Well, the beautiful work of Joel Munday, it's going to be shown at UAS Bookstore starting First Friday. But it's a big First Friday, man. There's a lot going on here.
Right?
But including zombies happening downtown. But I don't know if the zombies will get out to the UAS Bookstore. But it's happening starting at, what, like 4 o'clock, something like that?
5 p.m.
Okay.
We'll be there 5 p.m. to 6:30.
Great. 5 p.m. to 6:30, UAS Bookstore. Check out the works of Joel Munday. Color Photography is the name of it. Joel, thanks so much for coming in.
Hey,
really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate
okay.
it.
Free from all the trouble you're in the mud on your knees.
Bill and Sebastian there, talking about Lady Lazy Painter Jane. We've had lots of not lazy painters in here today, and we're going to be talking to a few more people here about a really interesting exhibit coming up in just a second. Cloudy skies is the forecast for tonight with a slight chance of rain, and then rain likely tomorrow, and mostly cloudy skies tomorrow night. Mostly cloudy with a chance of rain on Friday and increasing clouds Friday night, but then Saturday and Saturday night, just mostly cloudy skies and partly cloudy on Sunday and Sunday night. Columbus Day, wow, here's a word you don't see a lot in our forecast. Sunny. Yes, sunny, with highs around 53 degrees on Monday coming up. So that's got that to look forward to. That should be good. Hopefully that forecast will hold. Well, coming up next, I've got Jenny Del Rosario and Jackie Manning in the studio with me. Thanks to both of you for coming in. I appreciate it.
Thank you for inviting us.
Yes, absolutely. And really fascinating thing happening at the Alaska State Museum, an exhibit on the Philippines and Alaska, a new exhibit. Tell me a little bit about it, Jenny.
Well, I'd like you to know that we're here. The Philippine Community Inc., you know, we're the oldest established Philippine organization in the state of Alaska. There's a lot of organization, but we are the oldest, Philippine Inc. And our objective here in Juneau, is to foster better and harmonious relationship and understanding and brotherhood, or you may call it sisterhood, among ourselves and with other ethnic groups, of course, to keep alive our Philippine heritage and culture and be able to share it with you guys here in the community. Yes.
Now, when you said that it's the oldest, why is it the oldest? Is it did Philippine people seem to just settle in Juneau earlier?
Yes,
is that what happened?
Kind of stuff happened? In the early 1900s, the Filipino known as the Manila Man, they call us before, served on board the cable ship Burnside and helped to lay the underground water communication cables. Can you beat that? Link Juneau and Southeast Alaskan communities with Seattle. That's the early history part.
Telecommunications stuff, they're laying cables in order to
cables, railroads, all of these things. Okay, and, of course, the best known is the cannery that we have on the north side of Alaska. And, of course, that's why we're celebrating is because today we're happy about it. The Filipino community cares on younger generations, you know. We want to tell them that we have history very strong and the younger generation to appreciate their culture and heritage. And that's why I'm happy that this is happening. And Jackie, thank you very much.
Right. Jackie, you're with the State Museum and you're sort of curating this. So tell me a little bit about the focus of what's going to be there on display.
Well, we have... We have a variety of historical photos as well as some dance costumes and some crafts from the Philippines, and can tell you a little bit more about those. So as far as the dance costumes, we have one from a rural community that was danced when warriors returned, and we have all of the accessories with that.
Do you know what, like a rural community, like it was an Alaskan village, you mean?
No, this is in the Philippines.
In the Philippines.
I see.
These costumes were brought over from the Philippines and danced with a group at the Filipino Community Hall.
Oh, okay. Fascinating.
And so we have that dance costume. We also have another one from a mountain region in the Philippines, as well as accessories from a men's wedding celebration dance.
Now, the costumes, the one from the rural village and then one from the mountainous area, are they radically different?
They are fairly different. Different colors, different materials, and the dances are completely different. And we also have video of these dances being performed.
So
you'll be able to see.
Jackie. The costumes, because when you say about regions, each region are very proud of their own, you know, of their own. And the clannish thing type, you know, and they make their own so distinct that you can identify them. It's from that region and nothing similar to the others. But, of course, the colors, they're all bright colors to signify about, you know, that about pride and everything, about their culture.
Are they made like bird feathers and things like that? Or are they
beads and all of these natural elements, I think, and that beads and...
Beads. There's also some things from... we have a shirt that's made from pineapple fiber.
Pineapple, yeah, anything
that... There's also stuff made from banana fiber, so very...
And these materials that you're talking about, when did they come over to Alaska? Are these things that you acquired for the show from the Philippines, or they've been in Alaska for a long time? Or
we brought this here a couple of years ago because we would like to share our culture with the community, and we have established our cultural group, which we call Alitaptap, and we have all these costumes from all this region, and we also performed here and showcased our costumes before about 7 years ago, and that's why we are happy that we could share it with you again right now so that everybody would know that we have it, and we're willing to share it with you. And that's why we're celebrating right now, Jackie, October 2012 was, but in 2010, just to give a history of the Philippine American month, a historical month, in 2010 was the first year celebrating our Philippine American historical month. And such as this, it's the third year of our celebration since a legislation was passed by the U.S. Congress celebrating our historical month. Also, we are proud to say that in Alaska was the third state to pass local within legislation recognizing October as Filipino American Historical Month. And we're very proud about it, that Alaska came in right away and recognized it, because we know, and they know here in Alaska, how rich our culture and how we contributed to our culture here in the state of Alaska and in Juneau.
Are the traditional costumes and those kinds of things you're talking about, are those still in use in the Philippines, or is that kind of died out?
In some province, they're still very proud. The mountainous regions of the Philippines, they still wear this. And some tourists are sometimes surprised to see them. They're still wearing it. Some of those upper north of the Philippines, we call it Baguio and the Ifugao. There's some still that wear those, not, they don't call it costume. They still wear it as their normal, you know?
Right, right. Oh, so they're everyday kind of.
It's everyday kind, but it's
very traditional.
It's not
stuff.
Yeah, but you can still see them, but not in the cities, but in the mountainous regions.
Wow.
You can still see them. And it's surprising, but that's culture. They don't want to embrace sometimes modernization, but they love and they're proud of it.
Right.
It's pride in their culture and heritage. And the Philippines is about 7,100 islands, and each region and islands have their own different thing.
7,000 over 7,000 islands.
Yes,
wow.
Yes, true.
Amazing. So you can imagine how different.
You can imagine how it is that we are scattered around, but one you know,
united,
as one united in one country as the Philippines. Yes.
Jackie,
yes,
what were some of the main challenges to putting together an exhibit like this, where you're trying to represent sort of the whole of the Philippine contribution in Alaska and the history of the Philippine community in Alaska?
You know, there was that, trying to get that range, which there's not. We gathered as many historical photos as we could. We got one from the University of Washington, a photo of Filipino workers in a cannery in Atlatak, Alaska in 1937, in 1937. But as far as photos, we gathered as much as we could. And then when it came to costumes, it was the opposite problem. It was how to decide. There were so many dance costumes and so many great things that the Filipino Community Hall offered for us to use for this exhibit. So kind of came down to space, and so hopefully we'll have more space in the future to display more, because they're really amazing. They're really beautiful.
Did you work with a historian or a number of historians who maybe wrote up narrative to this as well that's displayed? Or,
you know, I worked with the current president of
our president, Ms. Jenny Strickler. Yes, she's very cooperative, and she's very knowledgeable of a lot of things about these things, because we would like really, we've been waiting for this showcase thing in the museum, and we're
it's very exciting
and very happy about
right.
it. And as what Jackie was saying, in the near future, we could showcase maybe every month of different costumes and different province, you know, and we have a lot to offer. We have a lot of them in our community, at the Filipino community, and you could see them, and you can have lots of choices. And it would be very exciting to show every month different things, and people would be amazed to see all these things that we have in collection.
The Philippine community in Juneau seems so solid. You know, it seems so together. What is it? Do you feel like there's something about the culture of the Philippines that has that bond, that where it's able to keep that sort of
well, in the Philippines, it's about clan. It's about regions. But here, we try to keep ourselves solid together as a small community. We try our very best. And as what we said, we are the second largest minority in a way, and we're growing. We're growing. And out of our population here, which is, I think, if I'm not mistaken, approximately 31,000, we're approximately about 5,000. So 1:6 is big enough. And we are hardworking, and we are here. We're here. We contribute to all aspects of our state and our community. And we're kind of trying to be solid. And we are.
Mm-hmm.
We are all for one, one for all. And that's why when there's celebration, we are there. You know,
right.
We are there.
Right.
So we'd like you to see and visit us sometime. We invite you to our community. It's an open community. So let a Filipino let you come in, but you can always come in. You're always welcome every time. Our community is somehow as open as it can be, Monday to Sunday.
Right, right. Well, as you're saying, an exciting exhibit that's happening. It's happening starting, is it on Friday? Is that when it starts?
It starts on Friday, and we're going to have a reception on Friday from 4:30 till 7 p.m., and it's free entry. And we're going to have a variety of speakers. We'll have Jenny Strickler, the current president,
yes,
and Mayor Bruce Patello, and there's going to be other speakers as well.
Great.
But the exhibit is up through the month of October.
Terrific. And there for the entire month of October, and an opportunity for all of us here to experience the history and, of course, all of the great contributions of Philippine people here in Alaska.
Yes. Again, I'd like to invite Jackie and me and everybody of our community, and would like to invite everyone to come on Friday at 4:30 at the State Museum to showcase our culture and heritage of Filipino community. And if you want to know more about a lot of things that's aside from the display that we have at the museum, you could come and visit our website, right? Can I say that?
Sure,
our Filipino
absolutely.
Website is www.philcomalaska.org, and our Facebook is Filipino Community Inc. We're trying, and we're keeping all our information updated. Visit us there, and definitely on Friday, please come. Jackie, thank you very much. Please come on Friday at the State Museum at 4:30 and stay with us.
Jenny and Jackie, thank you so much for coming in. I appreciate
Thanks
it.
For
it's an exciting
us.
Exhibit happening this this whole all this month.
Yes.
Stood before her work. She looked around everywhere. She saw the pictures and she painted them.
Support comes from Heritage Coffee Roasting Company, offering fresh roasted coffees since 1974 and proud supporters of public radio since 1987. Heritage Coffee, committed to community. Information online on Facebook or heritagecoffee.com.
Fish are running and bears are fattening up. Please remember that leaving fish and fish carcasses where they will attract bears can lead to danger for both people and bears. Stop fishing when bears are near and chop up and discard fish carcasses in fast-moving water. Don't teach bears that anglers provide an easy meal. At home, keep freezers and smokers in bear-resistant sheds or garages, and never put fish carcasses in gardens or compost piles. Together, we can keep bears wild and anglers safe. This message is brought to you by Alaska's Bear Committee.
Thanks for listening to A Juno Afternoon this afternoon. I want to thank all my guests for joining me. Headlines from NPR coming up next.
From NPR News in Washington.